From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the show. Nate, we're going to read some angry tweets a little bit later. I think you'll get a kick out of it. So, I was told via Twitter that nobody wants to go downtown Kansas City. Such a blanket statement.
Wow, thanks for speaking for me. I quite like going downtown.
Also, Mayor Quentin Lucas, I thought, had a great tweet about an hour ago. Downtown really is a lovely place. Come in for a visit. Much has changed since the 90s. Let's, speaking of the Royals, you know we had Matt Quatrero on the show. Was it last week? Sure it was. And we've got, if you want to go back and listen to that on our podcast page, Marco has that archived at 810WHB.com. If not, he'll be suspended. But to talk, give us a little bit more insight to Matt Quatrero as we get to know the new Royals manager. We have Charlie Volker on the show, and Charlie has some history a little bit with Matt Quatrero and can tell us a little bit about him. And Charlie also is host of The Drive in Albany on ESPN Radio in Albany, 104.5 from 3 until 7, The Drive with Charlie and Dan. So we have Charlie Volker on the show now. Charlie, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing very well. You know, just the timing that the Royals officially announced they're going to be basically moving to a downtown ballpark, and so everyone's up in arms about that. But we still wanted to get a chance to talk about the actual team, because the biggest news so far of the offseason is the hiring of the new manager, Matt Quatrero, and he was number one on our list, so we were very excited, and we were very excited about his work with the Cleveland Guardians and then with Tampa, because those are two teams that I'd love to see the Royals emulate. But you know a little bit more about him. Tell us your background with Matt Quatrero.
So I got to know Matt. I was the associate athletic director at the University at Albany, and I was the sports supervisor for baseball at the time, back way, I think it was like 2004. Matt was one of our volunteer assistants, and he got the job, I think, as a minor league instructor with Tampa Bay at the time. They were the Devil Rays at the time. And so got to know him then. He was from the town where I currently live. So I started to see him. He was doing some clinics. He was in Little League. I was working the clinics. So I got to know Matt a little bit more from, you know, as a volunteer assistant, very honestly, I saw him around. I talked to him a few times, but it wasn't like we really got to know each other. And then I got to know him through the years when he was doing some other stuff, and we stay in touch, and he's a great guy.
And so you tweeted that he'll be an awesome manager for the Royals. And obviously you know him, and you root for him to do well. But there's a lot of reasons why many people feel that way. And so you just tell me, in your opinion, why you think he was a great fit for the Royals and why he'll succeed.
All right. So, you know, I was an administrator for like 20 years. And luckily I was around a program. We won like 114 Division I championships in the time that I was there. And I got to see what, you know, like winning coaches and how they interacted. And I will tell you, like, I was at a clinic with Matt, and I saw the respect that he gave kids from 11 to 17. And then I saw the way he interacted with older guys and the way they just, you know, ended up talking with him. And he has a very easy presence around him. He's a really bright baseball guy. I've had baseball conversations with him. I enjoy those baseball conversations with him. He's a process-oriented guy. As you talked about, his experience with Cleveland and his wealth of experience with Tampa lend itself to a market like Kansas City, where you're not competing with the Yankees and the Red Sox as far as salary, but you're winning championships. I think he's going to be, very honestly, I think he's going to be a lights-out major league manager, whether I knew Matt Cottrell or not, just based on the way he talks and the way he interacts with the people and the experience he has.
Nate Buchady, you're on with Charlie Volker.
Hey, Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us today. And the reason that we asked you to come on is because we have Buster Olney from ESPN every week, and he was the one that told us about the fact that that Matt would come on your show on a consistent basis. And he kind of told that as a way to describe what kind of a person we're getting here coming to Kansas City. You can probably imagine we're a Midwestern town. We like people who treat people the right way. And Buster seemed to, you know, he felt like that the relationship Matt had with you was one that illustrates that he's the kind of guy that doesn't forget where he came from, treats people the right way. What kind of conversations would you have with him when he would come on your show?
You know, we just had him on Friday as well because, you know, I didn't want to bug him while he was in the first couple of weeks. He's got more important things to do than to talk to me. But, you know, like I said, hey, man, you know, whenever you're available, he's like, I'm available whenever you want. You know, that was his response to me. And, like, first thing, and he's just a great guy. As you said, he treats people the way you want to be treated. And, like, that was one of them, sort of the lessons. I'm an older guy, and, you know, that's the lessons our parents taught us. And that was one thing that, you know, sort of attracted me as far as Matt being a good guy. He just treats people well. And when you watch a guy give respect to an 11-year-old that asks an outlandish question, and you're the hitting coach or the assistant hitting coach for the Cleveland Guardians, you know, it means a lot. You're like, wow, this guy really gets it, and he gets how to treat people, and he gets how to listen to people. He's a really, really good listener.
And see, this is important because, you know, from what many people have said, the reason why the Royals moved on from Mike Matheny was maybe there was a disconnect there and a lack of communication between Matheny and some of the young players. Because it's different now. This is, look, we're all older, you know, and this newer generation of baseball players, you don't handle them the same way. I mean, you know, there's a difference in, Nate's brought up in the past. We talked about this. Somebody, everyone has their own individual hitting coach or a pitching coach in the off season. You're dealing with different information and analytics, and it's almost like you have to speak a different language and a different way to handle a clubhouse as opposed to the past. And that's just, you know, the makeup of this ball team and the youth of this ball team, you know, Matheny wasn't the right guy. And everyone has said this is exactly what Matt Cottrell can bring to the table. He is a great communicator, and he is a great listener, and he can build chemistry. And so when people say that, it sounds like you back that up. You're right, because that's one of the most important things that the new manager has to bring to the table for the Royals. He has to be able to get everyone on the same page, and he has to be able to deliver the Royals' message to these younger players, because I think that's been an issue. Because I don't think, and we've seen evidence of it, that there have been some young players that haven't bought in to what the Royals have been selling. And I think now with Matt Cottrell, I think he'll be able to deliver that message much better, much more effectively, based on what I've heard. And it sounds like you back that up.
I do. And Matt said something to us the other day that I thought was key. He talks about listening to all 26 guys on the roster. And today's younger player, and I know this from being in college, they want to be heard. They've got their format of Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, whatever it is. They have their platform to be heard. So when they're playing on a team, they want their opinions to be heard. And whether a manager listens to them or not, at least he understands where they're coming from, and they understand where he's coming from. And I think that is a huge aspect in today's game, that you have a manager that is able to not only listen to the guys that are making, the most money on the team, but also the guys that come up from the minor leagues that you're going to expect to do and come through in big situations for you. Because when you're a team these days, you use all 26 guys if you want to be a championship team.
And another part of it seems to be that anymore, maybe it used to be that a player in the big leagues would want to know that his coach had big league experience as a player himself, or else they maybe wouldn't value what he has to say. And it seems like anymore, it's more about, do you understand the analytics of the game? Do you understand all of the new ways that they are using technology to help pitchers, for example, increase their spin rate and things like that? And do you embrace those things? Because all these guys that are coming up have their own personal hitting coach or their own personal pitching coach that uses all of those things. How is Matt when it comes to incorporating all of that kind of new science to the game?
Well, look at Tampa. I mean, you can't get a better example of teams that use analytics. I mean, Kevin Cash pulls Blake Snell in the World Series game, and everybody, Twitter goes on fire, but he knew. He's like, hey, man, the numbers prove that out. I'll make that move a million times over. The instinct of the game is great, and you have to have a feel for the game. You have to have a feel for the players. But the teams like Tampa Bay prove that you can have a mid-range salary range, put guys together that can execute the game of baseball really well, and you can win. And I think in Kansas City, with the level of talent that you have there and an ownership that's willing to once things get, established, he's willing to invest in salary and, not go crazy. But I think Matt's the perfect guy to be able to take that, build the foundation with J.J. Piccolo, and then take this team back to the World Series where you were, 7 years ago?
It would that would be wonderful. And look, that's the funny thing too. We talk about this wanting to emulate the Rays and the Guardians. Well, the Royals, actually did something they couldn't do. They won a championship, but then they've hit rock bottom. And I think what we're all looking for is a competitive baseball team year in and year out. And I do think that hopefully with this new approach with Matt Quatrero, and with the nucleus of young talent they have right now, that if they do things right, that could happen sooner than later. We've got our fingers crossed how the starting pitching develops, but that's a whole other story. We've got you on. I wanted to ask you, you're up in Albany, and that's, I know, about 4.5 hours away from Buffalo, and I've kind of gone through some of your tweets. I know you had some Buffalo Bills guests on to talk Bills football, but, I mean, it's been, for any New York football fan, depending on who you root for, it's been a wild season with the Jets and the Giants and the Bills all in playoff contention. But I wanted to ask you about the Bills because we're concerned about that with the Chiefs too, because they're battling for the number one seed. How much panic is there? Do you have any Bills fans around you? How much panic is there right now about Josh Allen and about what's happening the last couple of weeks with the Buffalo Bills?
There is a lot of panic. Of the Bills Mafia, We live in a really interesting area. We have a lot of Giants fans. The Giants trained at the University of Albany for well over a decade. I think it was like 15 years. And we have some Jets fans. We have a smattering of New England Patriots fans from when they were winning. And we have a lot of Bills fans. And they're nervous. I think their panic button is a little bit drastic. I think the Bills are going to be fine. I think Josh Allen's going to be fine. I do think they miss Brian Daboll, and I do think that Josh Allen personally misses him, and that's hurt their offense an awful lot. They've had some, injuries. Tre'Davious White is supposed to be back soon, so we'll see what happens with that. But, I think the Bills are going to be okay. I just think, if you rank the quarterbacks, you guys have the better quarterback right now.
That's right. Nate Buchanan, any follow-ups on that?
Well, when it comes to the Bills, we knew for a long time what it was like to suffer a long, long drought of not winning the Super Bowl. This 50 years for the Chiefs, and I know it's even longer for the Bills and the history there. When that's the standard, right? Like, it's like for the Bills now, it's this team needs to go to the Super Bowl at least and win the Super Bowl most likely. That's a lot of pressure, isn't it? What's the pressure like from that standpoint, just in the fact of like being a good team is not good enough for the Bills fans because that's what they've been the last couple of years?
Well, I'll be honest. Going into the season, most of the analysts, everybody we were talking to, and obviously the Bills fans listened to, they were talking to a close, are they going to challenge the Dolphins for an undefeated season? Are they just going to run the table? And now they have three losses, and oh my gosh, one of those losses is to the New York Jets. The sky is falling, Rome is burning. All of the things are. The panic has set in because those expectations, especially from the older Bills fans that suffered four Super Bowls in a row, four Super Bowl losses in a row, there was a lot of pressure to be in the Super Bowl this year and win it.
It is interesting, too, because, like you said, with Brian Daboll, I don't think many people out, and maybe it's different in Buffalo and up in New York, I don't think a lot of people thought that that was going to hurt the Bills. And I don't think a lot of people were excited about that hire when he went to the Giants. And he spent like 1 year or so here as an offensive coordinator, and it was a disaster. It wasn't his fault. The team was a disaster. But it is a little surprising now that looking at it, he was a big part of Buffalo's success. And you see how good he is because of what he's done so quickly with the Giants, and he took the Chiefs quarterback coach and made him the offensive coordinator, Mike Kafka, and some people thought that he could have been the heir apparent to Andy Reid. Maybe he still is. Who knows? But, man, I think the takeaway here talking to you is Brian Daboll deserves a lot of credit both ways, and that was a big loss for Buffalo.
Yeah, I definitely believe that, man. When Daboll got the job, and I talked to some people that were really on the inside with the Bills, and they said, this is going to hurt Josh because Josh has such a close relationship that Brian Daboll made him an NFL quarterback. And, Ken Dorsey was his quarterback coach. But Brian Daboll was the guy that set up the offense, that listened to Josh Allen. We were talking about Matt Cotrero listening. Brian Dable's a really good listener because from what my understanding is, he's very good at listening to the offensive players, find out what they're comfortable doing, and then accentuating that and taking away the plays that don't work for him and eliminate them. And I think, you look at Josh Allen now, he leads the NFL in interceptions or the AFC in interceptions. And I think a lot of times he's pressed to make passes that maybe, and I'm just saying maybe, this is speculation, that if Brian Daboll were still there, he would have said, hey, man, you do not need to, force this one. You can hold on to this. You've got time. Very reminiscent of the pass that he threw, the interception he threw at the end of overtime on Sunday. He had more downs. He didn't need to make that pass. And if there's maybe a different voice in his ear, maybe he doesn't throw that pass.
Hey, Charlie, we really appreciate having you on. This has been some great insight. Once again, we've been visiting with Charlie Volker from ESPN Albany, and we started the conversation because of his longtime relationship with the new Royals manager, Matt Cotrero. So let's bring it back to that to finish it up. Just maybe one last time, give the people of Kansas City, Royals fans that are wondering what they've got with this new manager, what your opinion is on who's coming to Kansas City to lead this baseball team.
Well, I'll tell you, I worked in minor league baseball for like 7 years, and I worked in college athletics for like 20. And I saw a lot of managers and coaches, and communication's the key. And I think the Kansas City Royals got the best of manager. He's going to be the best manager in baseball. I equate him to a Bruce Bochy type of guy that listens to people, wins championships, is a good kind of guy, Buck Showalter type of guy. Players will love him. I think the fans will love him. You know, he's not going to light up the press conference, but he's funny. And he's got a nice personality. I think he's perfect for the Midwest. And you guys gained another Kansas City Royals fan, man, because I'm a big fan now. And I'm psyched to see you guys go and win the American League and win a World Series.
Okay, my final question for you. If you could only vote for one guy for NFL Coach of the Year, who would you vote for, Robert Sala or Brian Daboll?
Oh, Brian Daboll. Robert Sala had another he had a year to put together, something. Daboll walked in and changed the culture of a team. Now, granted, Saquon Barkley helped, but he and Joe Shane built up the offensive line there for the Giants, changed the culture of the team, you know, basically cleaned house of anybody, and he got rid of some really good players that weren't on the page. And basically, hey, if you're not going to follow our game plan, you're out. And I love that. I think he's doing a rock-solid job, and to me, he's definitely Coach of the Year.
Charlie, thanks a lot for the time, man. We appreciate it. Great stuff. Hopefully we can talk to you again soon.
Yeah, definitely, man. I enjoyed it and enjoyed being on. It's early for me. You know, I'm an afternoon guy. So you morning guys, I don't even know how you do it.
Now, you know what? Neither do I. I'm an afternoon guy as well, so I'm still figuring things out. Thanks, Charlie. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Take it easy, man.
All right, thank you. So the good stuff, Charlie Volker. Good. Whose idea was that? Let me give credit. Who do I give credit to? Pass. He said Nate in my ear. Go, no thanks.
Never mind.
We got a couple minutes here. I don't think I should, but do you want me to read some feedback so far in the stadium I'm receiving?
Sure.
So Crunchbacker, who I love Crunchbacker because he clearly listens to the show. We value all of our listeners. But he's got to be the angriest sports fan I've ever encountered on Twitter. There's a lot of always exclamation points and all caps, and he's usually mad about something. He was mad about Dr. Amy Patel being the fan of the year yesterday, which I don't know why. Yes. And so now he says, tell me if you agree, sign off, yes or no. The majority of Royals fans live outside of the KC loop. Fans in the suburbs and in the country areas of Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, and Missouri don't like to travel to downtown KC. The infrastructure, and then all caps, cannot handle this much traffic. Respond immediately.
Do Cardinals fans like going downtown for baseball?
Yeah, I don't know. Ask them. I'm not a Cardinals fan.
I think they do.
I'm sorry, but I'm not. I'm concerned about Kansas City, Missouri. I'm not overly concerned about what Nebraska or Iowa think of Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, I want all those people to come to Kansas City and spend their money.
I do, but we need to do what's best for Kansas City, Missouri.
I think they would love it. I think if there was an entire ballpark district and actually things for them to do when they come to town, instead of, we got to drive to this stadium in the middle of nowhere and then drive to some other part of town to stay in a hotel and find things to do. I think it would actually make it more of a destination. And yes, does the infrastructure need work downtown? I think that's all part of this, building up the infrastructure so the downtown can handle more things like this, because downtown is a destination. It's more of a destination than it's been in decades and decades now, and it's only going to continue to grow. I think it's a good thing for the city.
Am I crazy? I love going downtown.
I do too.
Am I stupid? Well, don't answer that. Here's I got a tweet from Chiefs John here. Chiefs John wants to know, is X Factor already banned from the Royals downtown stadium? That's not, you can't, there's not, it doesn't even exist.
Do you ever come to Royals games?
How can you, you can't ban someone from something that's not.
Should we have warned
what
Amy yesterday to just watch her back at all times? The NFL kind of put a target on her back.
No kidding.
Who could have possibly been mad about her being up for Fan of the Year?
X Factor.
You want me to read the tweet or not?
I don't know.
Yeah. I thought she was awesome. So I'll read you the tweet of him being mad about her being Fan of the Year. So in order to be an NFL Fan of the Year, you don't need to be an awesome fan. You just need to volunteer for numerous foundations that the Chiefs and the NFL help support. This title should be NFL Volunteer of the Year. What are you laughing at, Marco?
People are so just... People, man.
It's like waking up like, what am I going to be pissed off about today?
This damn woman that's trying to help save people's lives. I can't stand it. And she's not a good enough Chiefs fan. She just goes to all the games.
Why is she helping so many people? Stop helping people.
You're not a fan. You're a volunteer. You phony.
Sometimes I do wish Elon Musk would just burn Twitter to the ground. It might happen, but I just...
He always tries.
Yeah, one day I'm mad about it. The other day I'm like, oh, go ahead, Elon. Have at it.
Get over that. Oh, my God.
And no, okay, so people will stop tweeting me. No, I don't know if X Factor has been banned from the Royals downtown stadium because that was not in John Sherman's letter. So stop asking me that. They're not going to ban from someone from a stadium that has not been built yet. But if they do, he'd probably be the first guy. So I don't know.
I think that would get him some votes, you know, if he's looking for public support. Oh,
I should go back home now. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We've talked about Kansas beating Duke last night in the State Farm Champions Classic 69-64. You heard it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We've also talked about John Sherman's open letter to Royals fans and Kansas Cityans about the Royals' plans to move downtown. And now we'll talk about your Kansas City Chiefs with Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. Matt, I'll ask it to you this way because this would affect the Chiefs. It will affect the Chiefs. The Royals are going to move downtown. They're going to have a downtown stadium. That's going to happen. So people need to start to wrap their arms around it. It's happening. It excites me what the Chiefs could do to the Truman Sports Complex for added tailgating and almost like a title town similar to what they have in Green Bay. There's a lot there that the Chiefs must be salivating at that thought.
One would think, I mean, you know, and the Chiefs are going through their process too, and, you know, and even Clark Hunt has said that they're going into it with, you know, every option on the table. They're requesting a study to be done. They've sent that out. So, you know, to consider all the options, and which would include refurbishing Arrowhead, building a brand new Arrowhead on the site, other locations around the metropolitan area. I mean, anything's on the table. But Clark Hunt has made his preference known that if at all possible, he wants to stay where they are and probably stay in Arrowhead as it is. I think that's going to be difficult to do if they want the amenities and they want, you know, the long-term viability of the stadium. I mean, that's one of the things that the survey is going to check is just, you know, is the foundation of Arrowhead and the infrastructure there for another 50 years for that stadium that they can do that. But I mean, you look around the NFL and you look at what the Patriots have in Foxborough. You see what Dallas has done. You see what they're doing, you know, in Los Angeles and Vegas. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, doing what the Chiefs are, or what Royals are doing, rather, on downtown, rather, with the idea of having an entertainment district around the stadium. I mean, that's kind of the deal. And yeah, I mean, you could absolutely see that the Chiefs doing the same thing. And don't forget, I mean, there's a lot of other things the Chiefs would like to do too. I mean, their facility right now is too small for the staff they have, so they'd love to have some upgrades to their facility. Upgrade the parking and the tailgate experience would be fantastic, and having the space of Kauffman would allow them to do a lot and rebuild that entire area, maybe to the point that, you know, the goal 50 years ago when the place was build it and they will come and the development will be around. Maybe that could actually happen this time.
All right, let's get on to some Chiefs news. We found out that the Chiefs, after the Chargers waived former first-round pick defensive lineman Jerry Tillery, the Chiefs put in a claim, but they didn't get him. He went to the Raiders, right? So now Field Yates has just tweeted out that a new Texans running back, Eno Benjamin, who was waived by the Cardinals, the Chiefs, Saints, and Seahawks also put a claim in on him. So the Chiefs were one of the few teams that claimed running back Eno Benjamin. What do you make of that one?
I mean, to a degree, I don't make a ton, because I know Brett Veach this time of year is going to make any move like that that he thinks could make this team better. The position is odd because, you know, Arena Chiefs have four running backs right now, and one of them they're not playing. They got a fifth guy in Wayne Gallman on the practice squad that's played in the NFL, so I don't think the depth is a serious concern there. It's more curious than anything else that they would do that, but, I mean, I don't think it would necessarily be a move to displace anybody that they're playing right now. I think it would just be another move that they think would make their team deeper.
So what is the situation with the Chiefs running back? Clyde Edwards-Helaire was not utilized hardly at all. No targets, no touches. He had a couple of targets, but no touches. I mean, it looks like he's being phased out. Was that just last week? Is this like what does that mean moving forward, you think?
Yeah, hard to tell. I mean, I've talked to a few different people, because I took Andy Reid's answer at the press conference after the game the other day one way. I know other people have taken it another. So I guess you could say we don't really have a definitive answer from Andy Reid about what exactly is the status with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and what's the plan for him. But something had to happen. I mean, looking at the Titans game, I think it was pretty evident that the three-headed running back by committee wasn't working, because I think if you're giving five or six touches to any one guy, it's hard for anybody to get into rhythm. And I think you saw probably the best idea of a rotation, which is you give one player the bulk of the work. Jerick McKinnon is going to be the experienced guy who's in there on pass protection, who can catch the ball in the backfield, be your third down guy in situations where you really need somebody to help out Mahomes in the backfield. That makes sense. I mean, and I don't even know if it has to be necessarily Clyde or Pacheco, but it probably just needs to be one or the other. But the fact that the Chiefs really doubled down after Pacheco's fumble, kept him in there, and he responded and played very well, I think it begs the question, you know, if this is Pacheco's job now and Clyde is the backup. I mean, we'll see going forward. Maybe they'll continue to mix it up. Maybe, you know, Clyde will get a drive or two here and there. Maybe there will be a matchup one week where they feel Clyde's the better fit than Pacheco. But until we hear from Andy Reid or Eric Bieniemy that flat out comes out and says, hey, you know, Pacheco's the starter, I think we're still in kind of a wait-and-see mode.
All right, so Nate Bucchetti has not asked a question so far in this segment. Not because he's mad at you, Matt Derrick. I would like to let you know that somehow during this radio show, Nate Bucchetti locked himself out of his own hotel room. Can we get a round of applause, please?
That is impressive.
He has found his way back into his room. Nate, are you safely back into your hotel room?
I am. This is the second time already since arriving yesterday afternoon that I have locked myself out of my hotel room. So, but I'm blaming technology. These plastic key cards, they get demagnetized, and the lady at the front desk said this has been happening a lot, not just to me. Huh. So,
boy, Marco just said, listen to this expert. It's the technology is what locked you out, huh?
Yeah, and I know you're not supposed to keep your key next to your cell phone in your pocket because your cell phone can mess with the magnetic strip or whatever, but I swear I haven't been keeping it in the same pocket with my cell phone, and it's still happening, so I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Do you have any questions for Matt Derrick now that you're back in your room?
I do. Hello, Matt. How are you, buddy?
I am doing well. I am glad that you are back in your room safe and sound.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. Hey, so to kind of transition with this player rotation question, because you're talking about the running back spot, I've been asking about the wide receiver spot a little bit because all of a sudden the Chiefs trade for a new guy and he's more of a part of the offense than Sky Moore, like right away. What does that say about where Sky Moore is right now in this offense?
I think it says he's exactly where he was. I mean, if you look at even the workload on Sunday, it's pretty consistent with what he's been getting. And, you know, with Tony, I mean, he gets, 24, 28 snaps. I mean, that's less than Mecole Hardman's been averaging. You know, Hardman's been averaging 38 this season. So it wasn't like Tony just took up over his entire work. You know, some of that's still going to other people. But I think it begs the question a little bit. But at the same time, remember, Tony does have an extra year of experience, which helps. He was a first-round draft pick, so he, in theory, should be more developed and have a better skill set even than a second-round guy. He has had some experience with the offense in New York and terminology, so it's not completely new to him. But this has been pretty impressive for somebody coming into an Andy Reid offense midseason and being able to carve out a role very quickly. I mean, let's see if they can sustain this. Because you know that, hey, Tony only has a small portion of the offense, and they're only probably putting in one or two packages for him every single week. But they're definitely going to them. I mean, we have seen this year, you know, like the Colts game is a good example. You know, Andy Reid told us that Sky Moore had a package in there for him, and they just never got to it. Well, they're getting to the Kadarius Tony packages. They're making those a priority and getting them done. Like I said, I think he's still, you know, I guess he's going to move down one spot in the pecking order because Tony's clearly getting some work. But I don't see this as being a huge blow to him. I don't think it's a significant, you know, blocking his development or anything. I mean, I think Sky Moore's where he's been. I think he's going to continue to get pretty, you know, consistent work with what he has gotten to this point. But I still say, hey, you know, the biggest development that a wide receiver can make is never in season. It's never even during the off season. You get better as an NFL receiver between February and June. That's when you develop. If you go off on your own and get your own coaching and you work to develop your game, that is when you get better. It's not July through January that you get better. I mean, during a season, they're just trying to teach you. So I don't think it's going to develop, you know, hurt Sky Moore's progress. If he's going to have a big year too, it's going to be on Sky Moore to make sure that happens.
We have Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com on the line. Man, when Juju Smith-Schuster took that hit and then watching him get helped off the field, I'm thinking, man, he could be out a couple of weeks. Now, he posted on social media that he gave an update. He's doing well yesterday, but that, you know, that's good to hear that. But any indication about how long either Juju Smith-Schuster or Mecole Hardman might be out?
Nothing yet. And, you know, with Juju, I mean, we know how concussions are. I mean, you can have something very, very severe and be back in short order. You can have something that doesn't appear to be that bad and, you know, be out several weeks. I mean, it's impossible to know with concussions. So with Juju, it's just going to have to be a take it easy and see what happens and let him get healthy. And certainly with his situation, where the Chiefs are, what their goals are, this is the absolute case of where you don't want to rush him back. I mean, shouldn't be doing that in the NFL, period, when it comes to head injuries. But in this situation, you got time. Don't rush him. I mean, make sure that he's 100% healthy so you've got him for the rest of the way. Obviously, we'll get an update from Andy Reid later today on these guys. I have not gotten the sense that Mecole Hardman's issue is long-term. I mean, it certainly seems like it's short-term. let's see if he's back this week. I mean, I think there's a possibility, but we'll see what happens.
Nate Buchady.
What about Wiley? And what about the right tackle position overall?
Yeah, Wiley is you know, the difficulty for him is that, you know, it's a right elbow. And as a right tackle, you know, you got to have that elbow. And it looked like from watching the game that, you know, he started the game with nothing on that right side. Then later on, they put a quick brace on or something on that right elbow. And then he left on the same drive at the same time that Juju did. And it didn't look on that final play like he aggravated it further. It just looked like that because of the injury, he was just having some difficulty with that right arm. And if you don't have a right arm, can't play right tackle. So everything I've been told is that everything's looking good. I haven't heard from the MRI results yesterday. At least I haven't. I'm sure I know Andrew has. But that was going to be the key. But my understanding was that they didn't think that there was any significant damage there. Should be a short-term issue. If they can get, you know, a brace of some sort that he can play with and be comfortable with that right arm, there's probably a chance he could play this week.
All right, how do you view this matchup against the Chargers? It is it's a game of desperation for the Chargers. Look, I don't think that even if they win, they're not going to win the division. But if the Chiefs win this game, it's over. It's a 3-game lead, and they have the tiebreaker. But the Chargers usually give the Chiefs a damn good game. However, they are so decimated by injury, I don't know if they can do it this time. What do you think?
Yeah, last night I was trying to challenge myself to name the starters the Chargers had on Sunday at wide receiver, and I couldn't do it. I mean, that's just how banged up they are right now. And it's not just the offense. I mean, defensively, they're banged up too. Now, I expect, because it's the Chiefs, and this is what happened, everybody seems to get healthy against the Chiefs. So I'm betting that there's a majority of these guys that they're going to get back, because you're right. I mean, like you said, I mean, if they have any delusions of winning the AFC West, they have to win this game. They lose it, and that's gone completely. And even sitting at 5-5, if they lose this game, I mean, they're certainly now going to be really on the bubble for a playoff spot. So, I mean, it's not a deal breaker. I mean, they could lose this game and still make the playoffs. They're not winning the AFC West, though. And you're right. I mean, the Chiefs and the Chargers always play tight games. And even in L.A., I mean, that's not much of a home field advantage. I think with the injury situation right now, certainly the fact that that's going to be a pretty friendly crowd, I'm expecting a typical Chiefs-Chargers game, which is that this is going to be a really tight game. Chargers may even have a lead. The Chiefs are going to have a period in the second half where they just turn it on, they eliminate the lead, get back in the ball game. I think it's going to be a close game. I mean, I don't think the Chiefs are going to blow them out, because it's just the nature of these two teams to play some close games. But right now the Chiefs have just such a better situation, especially with the injuries.
Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com, thank you so much for the time, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
It is a pleasure, guys. And, Nate, best of luck with those keys, man.
Right. That's exactly right. We want him in the room for the rest of the show so he doesn't unlock, or he doesn't lock himself out of his room between 9 and 10 o'clock. Any reason for you to leave the room before the show again?
Maybe go downstairs, grab some breakfast. I don't know.
Now, Nate, Marco told me you were eating already.
Yeah, no, I grabbed one of those bowls of frosted mini wheats, you know, that comes like in the package already. I just threw that down real fast, so I don't think I need to get any breakfast.
So that doesn't hold
I should
over?
Be good.
Yeah.
Breakfast is for closers. Come
yeah.
on.
Maybe. There we go. Thank you very much, Matt Derrick. We appreciate your time. And so we'll find out what Gary Lezak has to say. Hopefully he has not locked himself out of his room after this on WHB. Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. In an open letter to all weather fans, our next guest has announced that he'll be moving all of his forecasts to downtown Kansas City, Missouri in 10 years. Ladies and gentlemen, Gary Lezak.
Good morning. I'm doing that. All my forecasts will be broadcast from whatever the stadium is going to be called, is it going to be still called Kauffman Stadium?
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Are you excited about that? Would you like to go to some ball games downtown?
I absolutely think it's a good idea. I mean, I like it. I think I hope they pick a good location. I hope they wipe out some other, you know, areas to create a tailgating experience and have a huge parking lot and make it so it's easy to park. And so that's one of the issues is always this. It's like, how are you going to park down there? But I'm sure that will be part of the plan. But, my gosh, I'm excited. How about you?
I'm very excited because it's good for the city and it's good for downtown. And I'm an inner city guy. I grew up in Northeast right next to downtown. And I love downtown. I love going downtown. And I look forward to what it's going to become, not only for me, but for my kids as they grow up.
Yes, sir.
Let's go.
Yes.
Let's go.
Kansas City is like a western town, not an eastern town. St. Louis is an eastern town. So they're different the way structures of these towns are. And St. Louis, with their stadium downtown, I was there just a couple weeks ago for the Emmys, and it was. I took a long walk because I just had my hernia surgery, and I went all around the stadium there, and it was just beautiful. All the establishments around there, so it could be quite. It will be quite an experience for Kansas City when it's all built and done. But is it a decade away? Is it really a decade away?
Yes, probably. You were in St. Louis for the Silver Circle Award.
That's right. I was there for that. So I went to the Arch, went around the stadium there. So I just think, this is a great, great idea. Great. I'm glad. I'm looking forward to that. So Arrowhead, G-E-H-A Field at Arrowhead will stay out there probably. And that could be that. We can maybe create that experience even better too. So amazing. Amazing. Is Nate on the phone? Is he here today?
He locked himself out of his hotel room earlier. Let's find out if Nate is still available. Nate Bucati, hello.
Hello, Gary. I am back in my room. You'll be happy to know.
Because it's 22 degrees there, and there's a winter weather advisory, and it might even snow in Denver by tomorrow morning. Are you there tomorrow?
I will be here tomorrow morning and flying home right after the show is over tomorrow morning, yes.
Hopefully. You might beat the snow. So 70% chance of snow in Denver tomorrow, but not here in Kansas City. So what are you doing out there?
I'm going to be broadcasting the Invicta FC 50 card tonight, which is a milestone for a groundbreaking organization that brought women's professional mixed martial arts into the world. And they're doing a groundbreaking format tonight with a tournament to decide the strawweight champion. So it's going to be a big, fun night. You can watch it on the Invicta FC YouTube page and on Axis TV. Thank you for asking, Gary.
That's awesome. Well, have fun. Let us know how that all goes. Here in Kansas City, it is Mr. Blue Sky today. Sunshine's filling up our sky. It is a cold weather pattern, very interesting weather pattern that continues to evolve before our eyes. Remember, the LRC sets up between around October 1st and November 30th. I usually identify about October 5th, 6th, or 7th, that first week of October is day one of this year's pattern. It started out very dry, and then it got a little colder. We had an early freeze. Then it warmed up a little bit. We had rain, thunderstorms, and more rain, a little bit of snow twice now. And it's been cold. So we're in that first cycle of this year's pattern. The pattern will repeat over and over again, and we're still identifying what that is. On KSHB, November 30th, the day before I retire, we're planning on doing a weather special, and it is going to include the LRC forecast for the winter. So we'll, and other things. So it'll be special on November 30th. We're working on that, still trying to figure out this pattern. But 33 for today's high, 20 or 19 tonight, 40 tomorrow, and there may be a snow flurry tomorrow with a cold front blowing through, and then a chance of some snow flurries tomorrow night, and about 15 degrees, 27 on Friday. Saturday, back up to close to 40, and Sunday, 41 degrees. And on KSHB 41, we have the Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Chargers from Los Angeles. So big game coming up this weekend in L.A., but it'll be on KSHB 41. So very exciting. We'll talk more about that, I'm sure, in the next few days. Right now, Stephen, Nate, it's 24 degrees. It's cold outside with a wind chill factor of 11. So bundle up as you head outside, but the sun is out. That's it. I'm out. You guys have a great day.
That's Gary Lezak. Back into this on WHB.